And we're live. Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of the Wheelie Podcast. This week, it's on a Thursday due to some travel. I'm your host, Micah Toll, and I am joined again by Lectrek's Seth Weintraub. How's it going, Seth?
I'm good.
Awesome. Seth's good. I'm good. And we have a lot of great new e-bikes to cover this week. There were a lot of new unveilings. We've got a pile of new e-bikes from Rad. We've got new e-bikes from Aventon, Frey, Ride One Up, all over the place, plus a bit of news as well. So let's see, which e-bike unveiling are we going to start off with this week, Seth?
All right, yeah, these are some of my favorites. So Rad Power Bikes unveils four new e-bikes in faster speeds and the biggest shakeup yet.
Yeah, this is kind of wild for Rad because, you know, every couple years they've done a shakeup, you know, unveiled a new model here, a new model there, but this time they dropped four new bikes at once, plus their new batteries. So we've got a pile to go through here. Let's start with a new family of bikes that they unveiled. These are the Radster family, and it's two sort of similar bikes. One is a trail bike, and one is more of a road-oriented bike. So on the trail bike, it's got 3-inch tires, which they're calling mid-fats, and then the road bike has 2.2-inch tires. And you know, they've got a few other small differences, fenders, but largely they've got a lot of the same parts, which is like just a whole new array of interesting new components here. Rad's got a new color LCD display that comes with a USB-C device charging port. So, you can finally use all of your new cables instead of looking around for those old USB-A cables. Let's see, it's got turn signals on the back of it. Both bikes come with torque sensors, so it's gonna have that nicer pedal assist. They're both IPX6 water resistant, so you don't have to worry about riding them in the rain. Of course, they're gonna have hydraulic disc brakes because Rad is really making a push towards hydraulic brakes. We've got an NFC key fob now, so you can actually lock and unlock the bike with like a little like quarter size credit card little key fob thing, which just, you know, gives you a little more added security that someone can't just walk up and, you know, turn on your bike kind of thing. We've got a through axle front wheel hub, which is both a very nice, more like robust component, so it makes a stronger connection to the front wheel, and it's probably in response to a lawsuit that Rad had about a front wheel coming out of a Rad runner, I believe. But what, you know, whatever caused it, whether it was lawyers or just they wanted to improve the design, it's great to see that there as well. And that's not the end of it. We got more. There's a new 200 lumen headlight, so, you know, really bright. If you've got one of those like 100 lumen headlamps, you know how bright 100 is. So this is actually a headlight that you can start to light up the road with. It's not just a little, you know, like here I am, so cars see you kind of light. And then last but not least, both of these bikes, the Radster Trail and the Radster Road, both come with Rad's new Safe Shield batteries. So they've got these new batteries that are potted inside. So they're designed to be even more resistant to some of the damage that might cause fires. You know, like if the battery was dropped and damaged, or, you know, it makes it so it's much harder for water to get into those cells, that kind of thing. So, you know, a lot of new parts there, but the entire bikes are... both of them are new, brand new models. So it's cool to see Rad just expand into new models like this. That's not the end of it. We're barely like halfway through here. They've got a new Rad Expand 5 Plus. So they've basically taken the Rad Expand that they had and they've brought it into their Plus lineup of bikes, which is like sort of their nicer, higher end family. So the Rad Expand, it gets a lot of those parts that we covered. It's got that new color display with USB-C charging port. It's got the torque sensor, water resistance, turn signals, through axle. It also now tops out at 28 miles an hour. Oh, I think I forgot to mention that on both of the first two. Both of those are also class three bikes that go up to 28 miles per hour. So
yeah, that's huge for me. I think that's like long time coming and it makes total sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so many new things on these bikes. I completely forgot about the speed on those two. This one is also class three. It's got a higher weight rating, up to 375 pounds now. It retains that same folding design. So,
what's the split on the weight rating? It's like 220 on the 250 on the front and something on the back.
That's a good question. I don't have it in front of me. I don't even remember if that was in the spec sheet that they sent out.
Because that rear thing looks pretty good. We'll have to look into that. But Yeah, that looks pretty burly there for a golden bike. Like, I don't know if I'd put a friend back there, but maybe a child.
Yeah, definitely a kid seat. It looks like you could handle. Definitely will want to double check that. But with 375-pound capacity, I imagine that they're expecting this to serve some utility role like that. Definitely no kid seat or something. Let's see. You know what? There's a chance I read that off of the new Rad Wagon spec, the 375-pound. That might be. Yeah, sorry about that. All of this is right. There's so many new things here. It's hard to keep them separate. So let me correct myself. The 375 pound weight capacity was the Rad Wagon 5. We
Oh,
haven't
okay.
gotten to that yet, though. Still on Rad Expand Plus. Let's see, the last couple things are they've added a suspension fork. So now you've got suspension, and then it also gets Rad's SafeShield batteries. So these aren't the semi-integrated ones like they had on those Radster bikes. These are sort of the original style Rad batteries that are like fully outside of the bike, but these also get updated to the Safe Shield. So a lot of interesting things to see there. But perhaps my favorite of all of the launches might be this last one. This is the new Rad Wagon 5. So they've done a lot of updates here. The Rad Wagon 4, a lot of people remember it's kind of infamous for having that 22-inch tire size, which was like almost unheard of in the bike industry, so you really had to just get those from Rad. Now they've moved to a 20 inch, so not only can you actually find these tires in any bike shop, but it also lowers the center of gravity of the bike.
And those are
So
3 inch wide or four?
they are, it's a good question. I think they're either 3 or 2.5. They look like threes though.
Yeah, I would say 3.
Yeah, so I think almost all cargo bikes now are coming out with 20-inch wheels. Occasionally you see 24, but this has just kind of become a standard. So great to see Rad embrace a normal tire and wheel size there. They've increased the weight capacity, like we said, the 375. This one also 28 miles per hour. Let's see what else. It gets the turn signals, it gets the thru-axle front hub. They've got new running boards and new deck pads now, so they actually look a bit nicer in that accessory list. So they're kind of, I think, again with the Radwagon, taking it more upmarket, the way we saw them go upmarket with their Plus line and that sort of thing. I
Yeah, I would
think
say
the
across the board, that's kind of like the idea here, is like
oh,
everything's going.
absolutely.
And if you kind of go back to the original Radsters, those are kind of like they're, $1,000, 26-inch wheel bikes, but these are, double the price, but double the amount of features. So
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
definitely the theme.
Yeah. And I think, they were so hammered when electric came in, electric XP and then the X-Peak, and basically
Right.
electric keeps releasing bikes that target different rad bikes. They had the Expedition, which a lot of people called sort of like the rad wagon killer. So I think Rad has basically said, we don't want to compete on price. We don't want to do this race to the bottom. So we're going to build better bikes, more features, that kind of thing.
And it's not just electric. There's also a few others like Engwe and
For sure.
Haybike and those kind of, I don't want to say they're dropship types, but a lot of them. They don't look like they've done a lot beyond what, comes out of the factory in China.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, Rad's come a long way because if you remember back in like, I think they got their start in like 2015 or 2016 with a Kickstarter. But back then, they looked kind of like those white label bikes that we're seeing
Right.
from the companies like you mentioned. And so, the company's definitely come a long way. And now you can see that, these design shops really make a difference. And it's been kind of a theme. Like even was it back in 2019, I think, when they unveiled the Rad Runner, I think that was sort of the start of Rad really saying, like, we're gonna do something new, we're gonna do something different, and we wanna lead with innovation. So the downside is that these prices have really come up. So that Rad Wagon, that's $2,200. Rad Expand 5 Plus, $1,900. Radster bikes, they're both $2,000. So these
Right.
are prices that compared to years ago when Rad was like a $1,500 bike company, it's a significant bump. At the same time, it's not as high as they had gotten like a year ago when we were talking about $2,500 plus bikes. And so, I think Rad is sort of settling in with modestly high prices now, but they don't feel as painful as some of those,
Yeah, they kind of start at like 2,000, and then there's room for like sales and stuff that, maybe pull them down to, the $1,500 range if they're, really, if you're doing a lot of shopping around and stuff. So I agree, and it's good because there's a lot of people in the $1,000 market, but there's not too many people in the $2,000.
Absolutely. And I think, if you want a cheaper bike from Rad, like you want to be in the Rad family, they still have the Rad Runner at, what is it, like
Like a 12,
1500
no,
something?
it's like 12. The original Rad, I think, is like 12, if I remember correctly. Or I saw it on sale for 12, maybe. That might be.
It might still be. Oh, that's right, because I think they said that they were going to continue their like holiday sales all throughout the year. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Let me see what I find here on the website, but keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, so they still have their more like budget-friendly bikes on the lower end, but it really seems like they're making this push towards their plus line and their higher-end bikes, which, if you're someone who appreciates bikes and appreciates quality, that's great to see. Is it going to price out a few people? Yeah, probably. But it just seems like they've made that decision that they're not going to join this race to the bottom, that they really want to make bikes that they can, say are innovative and different. So I think that's, in a way, that's great. I just hope that it's sustainable for the company, that there's enough people ready to pay those higher prices that Rad can continue to do this.
Yeah, it looks like the Rad Runner 2 is at $13.99, and those go on sale occasionally. So you're still able to get a Rad bike at close to $1,000 where it
Yeah,
starts.
and of course the other thing is that Rad has such a wide line of accessories now. That's the other thing that really makes a big difference with, all of their boxes and cases and pet carriers and battery carriers and everything. So there's a lot to like here, but I do worry a little bit about the financial situation. Are there going to be enough people that want to pay these higher prices for Rad? So something I think to watch throughout the year.
Yeah, and I wonder if they've perhaps like said, all right, hey, we're not going to be the biggest company anymore. We're going to instead go for the premium, go for the margins, build bikes that nobody else is building. The new Radster line is kind of a kind of trail bike, kind of like city bike. That's typically been a hybrid, but they have so many different, I'm just looking at some of these pictures. They have a lot of different options there. I really like that one, like hard veneer thing.
Yeah,
That looks
their
like,
hard cases are really nice.
yeah. I mean that's not something you're gonna find on a drop ship kind of bike. So these are built for like, urban commuters that perhaps maybe, would, look at a Bosch type bike before, and now they're gonna be able to, probably save 1 or 2,000 bucks. And get a still a premium bike, but not, have to spend close to, 4 or 5,000 bucks on it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how these do. I think they start shipping in April, so hopefully we'll be able to get our hands on some by then to check these things out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Those are looking good. And I actually like the Expand. I wonder if at some point this is gonna take over for the Runner, because it like as a folding bike, this kind of looks a lot like the Runner, and it's got some of the same, the cargo capabilities. But of course, you get the ability to fold it up and maybe put it in your vehicle. And what's kind of somebody sometimes they don't think about or advertise is the fact that you can theoretically, I don't know if Rad does this, some companies do, put it in a much smaller box, fold it up, and that saves a lot of shipping costs. And we're talking about $50 or something, which can really price the bike.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on. Aventon Rambles e-bike unveiled as brand's first mid-drive performance electric.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. If we're talking about the idea of these companies not building white label bikes and really, building something new and innovative, Aventon has definitely gone that way now with the Rambus. And it's also their first mountain bike, which is really interesting. This is like a real dedicated mid-drive electric mountain bike. And to achieve that, they developed their own mid-drive motor. They call it the A100, and it's got a torque sensor as well. So, you know, this is a very nice setup. This is not like a cheap entry-level mountain bike. This thing is really nicely designed, IP67 rated. So, you know, you can probably like drop this thing in water. I think the 7 in the IPX7 is submerged up to a meter of water for like 30 minutes. So really well designed. It's got weirdly 15 pedal assist levels, though they're divided among like 5 levels in each of 3 eco, trail, and turbo modes. So you've got a lot of sort of like customization there when you're riding on trails, how much power you want. Technically, it's listed as a 250-watt continuous motor. However, it's got a 100 newton meter torque spec.
Wow.
So, yeah, that 250 watts is like, you know, just a sticker at this point. And I'm actually surprised that they went with that like sort of 250-watt label, because I don't think they sell internationally, or at least outside of North America, where you would need to sort of underrate these motors. At least not their e-bikes. I know, you know, for a while they sold internationally pedal bikes, but I don't think that they were planning for an international market with this, unless they're really planning on expanding that footprint. So maybe that's a clue that they are with that weird 250-watt designation on a super powerful, presumably like 750-watt peak motor. I think they even said that technically it puts out 750 peak watts. So they're like trying to make sure people know that, like, yeah, don't get scared by the 250 label.
Yeah, so maybe you can talk a little bit more about the motor. This isn't a motor I've seen before. This is, you know, Benton's motor. Is this like a rebranded, kind of looks like a Bafang M600-ish thing? What do you think about this?
So here's the thing. They said they designed this in-house. I'm not saying I don't want to take them at their word, but motor design is a complicated thing. And most e-bike companies do not design their own motors, because it's its own like whole other animal. So if they really did design this in-house, that's huge. They had to bring in engineers that specialize in this. I mean, this is not as easy as, you know, putting together some frame tubes kind of thing. So it is its own motor. It does kind of look like a couple Bafang motors, but I'm not sure that it's like there's none that it looks exactly like. So it doesn't look like sort of a relabeled Bafang motor to me, even though it's got some similarities. And I can't place where it could have come from. So, you know, I mean, it does seem to support their claim that they developed this in-house and it is a custom motor. It's just, you know, of all the companies, I wouldn't have expected Aventon to say, like, now we're a motor company too. Like,
yeah,
there are motor companies that have gone out of business.
And there's some gray area too, where like, you know, for years, Luna would say like, hey, we worked with Bafang and we, you know, we built this motor with this, with its own, you know, power curve and all this other stuff. And, you know, maybe Bafang's out there saying, hey, you know, we're going to white label it with your own specs and your own whatever, and we're not going to take credit for it and you can put your name on it. So I think there's probably some gray area where, you know, they probably outsourced to a company like that and said, hey, these are the exact specs we want. We have some, you know, we have some ideas here and, you know, we want 100 newton meters of torque and that kind of stuff. But
yeah, you could be right there. You could be absolutely right. I mean, it's something that, you know, again, like I don't want to like not believe them, but it's just, it's so complicated to build these motors, especially a mid-drive. Like there's a lot that goes in there. So, you know, if they did, then that's great. And it sounds like great performance. It should be noted here though, that this is a throttle-less e-bike. So I know for Americans, like, you know, throttle-less e-bikes that are pedal assist only, they sell at like a tiny fraction of throttle e-bike sales. So like everything about this I love, but it would be nice to have a throttle as well.
Yeah, and this is also class one, so it's you know, it's going to max out at 20 miles per hour.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I mean, for me, when I'm riding like off-road single track, like 20 miles an hour is super fast. Like I don't like going 28 miles per hour when I got trees like that I can reach out and touch. You know, I don't need to go, that's like when I'm commuting in a bike lane, I'm on 28, so that doesn't bother me too much personally. But man, like I would have loved to have a throttle. And I will say, throttles on mid drives, it's tricky to do well because it's so easy to mess up. Not for the company, but for the rider to like just make mistakes, shift at the wrong time, and you know, destroy chains, destroy gears, that sort of thing. So I think Aventon was probably avoiding a lot of customer service tickets by not including the throttle, but I think it's going to cut into sales as well. So it's another one to watch. I think it's going to be interesting moving through 2024 and looking at how a lot of these different models do, you know, how many we start seeing out there, that kind of thing. At $2,700, I mean, there's a lot of nice componentry here, but it's, you know, it's a sort of entry-level premium mountain bike, I would say. This is not like what we normally see from direct-to-consumer electric mountain bikes. So this is a bike that's up there. You're paying, you know, a good amount of money to get good parts, but that market's going to be a lot smaller than the typical, you know, $1,500 direct-to-consumer market.
Yeah, and what about also the 32-volt versus the 48-volt drivetrain? Like, you know, obviously, Brose, Bosch, they kind of work around the 36-volt, but more of the, you know, previous event and stuff, buffeting stuff is going to be 48 volts. What do you think about that decision to the 36-volt?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's almost not seen anymore on throttle bikes, at least in the US, but for pedal assist, a lot of companies still get away with it. I mean, I say get away with it. It works just fine. But when the rider is putting in their own power, then, you know, the difference between 36 and 48 is just not that big of a deal. It's easier to get more power with 48 because you don't have to increase the current. You know, if you have the same amount of current, which is where all that heat buildup comes from, then upping the voltage is just like a cheap and easy way to make more power. But with the rider pedaling, I'm not sure it's that necessary. In this case, it means they had to go with a lot more amp hours. So it's probably like 18, 19 amp hours, something like that, to be able to get that 708 watt hour battery. But I don't think it's a huge problem here, because also someone who's going to buy this bike is someone who is like already a mountain biker, you know, like
right.
They're comfortable with pedaling. It's part of the process for them. So I don't even think they're going to, you know, feel like it doesn't have the same power, because it's almost like your legs are making up that last 12 volts.
Yeah. And so how would you compare this thing? I mean, obviously there's a lot of difference with mid drive and rear hub motor. Like we just talked about the Radster off-road thing. That's going to come in at like 2,100. This is going to be a little bit more at 2,800, I think.
This one was, 2,700. And I think the Radster Trail was 2,000 even, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously mid drive versus rear hub, that's a big difference. Battery size, but you know, like overall, like who's going to be the market for?
Yeah, well, I would say that, you know, this is definitely a much nicer bike in terms of componentry. I mean, even things like, you know, the Maxxis tires, that kind of stuff. So this is definitely going to a rider that appreciates that stuff more and actually sort of like, you know, understand some of those difference. Exactly. Yeah. When it comes to Rad, it's like a bit younger version of Pedego, in that like that customer doesn't want to get into like the weeds about the components. You know, they want
right.
something good, but you know, they're not like, oh, well, you know, I only do like Maxxis and Schwabi. Like I won't do like a Chaoyang tire kind of thing. So,
right.
you know, it's, I see it as a bit of a more discerning rider looking for something like this. Whereas Rad is really more of a mass market kind of thing.
Well, it's good to see both of them kind of going upstream in terms of quality. When are we going to see like a review of this one?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's on the list. I don't think they have these shipping yet, if I'm not mistaken. I got to double check that. But I was just talking to Aventon about it, and I'm excited to review this one as soon as I can.
Yeah, and I'm seeing them more and more in bike shops as well. So that's kind of cool that they're going that,
oh,
that
yeah,
route.
They're doing a great job with expanding the like independent bike shop dealer network. Like, you know, hats off to them, because that just makes it so good.
Totally. All right, let's move on. The Frey, I love this name, Dopamine 2.0, launched as a new high-performance electric mountain bike with throttle. I'm obviously a huge Frey fan. I love their Bafang Ultra bike, so excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we were just saying that like most electric mountain bikes don't come with throttles, especially the mid drives, because it's so hard to make it work. Frey is like, hold my bike bottle, because they'll give out throttles, like they're cheap here. And so they've got the Befang M560, which is a very powerful motor. It's only listed at 500 watts, but again, like, don't believe the wattage here, because the torque rating is what you want to look at. The torque here is 140 newton meters, which is
Jeez.
like, yeah, I mean, that's like rip a chain if you don't do it right kind of torque. The motor you were talking about, Seth, the Fang Ultra, I think is 160 newton meters. So this is like almost right up there with what is essentially the most powerful, torquiest retail electric motor out there for
Yeah,
e-bikes.
and I have firsthand chain ripping experience with that one, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at Eurobike a few years ago, I unfortunately did some high-speed metal work myself on a chain with that motor. So I think these all come with gear sensors now, which is helpful for preventing some of that user-caused damage. But it is something to watch out for with these super torquey motors. But there's more to this bike than just the motor, even though that's really awesome to have, that power and throttle on an electric mountain bike. There's a lot more here. The bike has a lot of really nice parts, not just RockShox suspension, but that's a Yari fork up front, which is very nice. It's not the top RockShox fork, but it's up there. They've got a pretty decent deluxe rear shock there. They've got the
A lot of travel on that one too, it looks like.
yeah, that's where's the spec on that one?
I would guess.
160 millimeters. That's a little over 6 inches on
Wow.
the front. Yeah. On the rear, it's I'm not sure what the rear was. The front was 160.
Definitely a lot of travel.
Let's see, it's got the SRAM NX 11S drivetrain, so you've got those 11 speeds. Again, like, not the top of the line SRAM transmission, but still a very good one. The quad piston hydraulic disc brakes, the Magura, either MT5Es or actually, where's the spec? They're again, they're like either the top or almost the top of the line of
Yeah, the
Maguras.
MT5Es.
Exactly, yeah. So, very good electric bike specific brakes. Basically, Frey is always known for putting really good components on these bikes, but still giving a more than reasonable price, because this is basically factory direct. This is competing with like the high bikes and Specialized in Cannondale and those kinds of companies. It's going to be, a bit heavier, not like quite as refined, but it's competing with a lot of these like six, seven, eight, $9,000 bikes. But it's priced at $4,980, so basically like $5,000, because you're getting it straight from the factory, and because the label is, a Chinese company instead of a, Swiss or American company that builds their bikes in China. So,
Yeah, and
we.
I would say, like you say, competing, and that's true in a lot of areas, especially components. But like when you talk about the motor, it's totally a different, you have a Bosch that may go up to 28 miles per hour and put out 250, like haha, maybe 500 or 750 watts. These things throw out like tons of power, and it's not weird to see these things go 35 miles per hour. They are just insane.
Absolutely.
So it like there are a lot of comparisons to be made, but like where China and where Bray kind of differentiate is that they're heavier motors for sure, and they're obviously Befangs versus Bosch, but they do different things, I would say. I mean, you're talking about a whole 10 miles per hour faster.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great point. When I say competing, I guess that's more on the component side than the performance side. The performance is like night and day.
Yeah, and that's not free really. Those motors are much heavier than the Bosch motor, but they put out some. So it's a trade-off a lot of people are willing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I was on a group ride once with a bunch of Frey bikes, and the guys actually went up the downhill course, like made sure it was closed first, but they just like rode right up that thing.
I mean, we kind of did something similar at Interbike back in at Reno when that was still happening, but those were on Bosch things, and I believe we were going up at like 5 or 10 miles per hour, so it wasn't quite as exciting, I bet, as Bray experience.
At least you'll need a chairlift.
That's right. All right, let's move on. Ride One Up. So I love this company. They make the perfect, like, Brosa motor stuff. They have the limited V2 launched as a new torque sensor electric.
So this is an update to the original Limited, which they sunsetted in order to make room for this bike, which has some interesting new upgrades. Now, this is very much like a commuter style bike, so Ride One Up has really expanded into different areas, but this is sort of a return to form for their original focus, which was as a commuter bike. Probably my favorite update here is that it now comes with a torque sensor. Anyone who actually pedals bikes will know, or pedals e-bikes, I should say, will know that, the difference in feeling is just so, I mean, just makes such an impact on the ride, because a torque sensor, it gives you that responsive, there's no pedal lag when you start to pedal. It's more intuitive feeling. When you push harder, you actually get more motor power, as opposed to just getting the same power out of the motor, no matter how hard you push with a cadence sensor, that kind of thing. So I really love seeing that they brought the torque sensor into this model again. And to me, that just makes such a difference. Let's see, they've got the new Reanshin battery here, Samsung cells, which is always great to see. I don't see anything about it being UL listed, so I'm not sure that this is a UL listed battery, which a lot of the industry is going for. But this is also a lower cost bike. This is, I think, $1,595, $1,600. So, Ride One Up is always aimed for having more budget options, as well as a couple of these nicer bikes we've seen. So, it wouldn't surprise me if they haven't paid for that UL certification there, which is not cheap. But it does have some nice parts on it. It's got those WTB Groove E, so they're e-bike specific, 2.4-inch tires. At least for me, for commuter bikes, I always like having a little more meat down there. Like the 2.4, 2.5-inch tires, because when you hit a pothole, it just makes such a big difference. Have like a little bit more air capacity down there. It's also got a 100 mm fork. It's a Suntour. It's I mean, Suntour does make some nice forks. This one is not particularly high up on the line, but it's fine. Some other components like the Shimano 8-speed, it's fine. I think it's a tourney, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, not the worst, not the best in Shimano's lineup, but like we said, this is designed to be affordable while still giving good performance and good components. That torque sensor, you rarely see them on bikes under $1,500. So great to see there. And to me, this is just like a return to form for Ride One Up, to have another really good option in the affordable commuter space to get, like, 28 miles per hour, hydraulic disc brakes, torque sensor, all of that in $1,600, with the fenders included, by the way, is a big deal. If they could have included that rack, I would have been like over the moon. But they gotta have a few add-ons so that they can make some money on accessories, I guess. So I can't really fault them too much there. One last thing that I think was kind of neat is that they offer two different handlebars here, depending on the style. So if you get the step over, it's a little sportier. You get the sort of like sort of halfway between like straight bars and mountain bike bars. Then if you get the step through, they're a little more cruisery, a little more swept back for that, like, sort of upright, not beach cruiser, but more in that direction kind of riding posture, almost like a Dutch bike kind of thing. So it's interesting that they actually differentiate between the two models when it comes to the handlebars, to give it a different kind of ride and feeling. In my opinion, the step through is like so chunky looking, the frame there. They've got a
Yes.
huge gusset on it to make sure it's strong enough, which, I guess if you have to choose between looking good and being like robust, probably better to make sure it doesn't break. So, props to them there. But I definitely prefer the step over, in my opinion.
Now, did you mention that the tires, these kind of look like Schwalbe Big Bends, but and which are one of my favorites, and I know Rad One Up seems to like know what I love, but do you know if those are Schwalbes or something else?
No, these are WTBs.
Okay.
It's a tire called a Groovy,
Okay,
with the
got
E
it.
being for electric, I believe.
Nice. And then 2.4 inch wide. That's still a really good size, I think, for, you hit a pothole, you're not gonna like die. So
Absolutely.
you know, not obviously as efficient, but perfect size for your bike.
Yeah,
Really
when
do
you've
like the
got
fit.
750 watts, like you can give up a little bit of efficiency.
Right. Totally. And the price always ride one up's kind of deal is 15.5 solid. Love it all around.
Yeah, even like that copper color. When I first heard that it was going to be copper, like I didn't know. Like I was picturing like cooking pans, but it actually looks pretty nice. I think
Yeah, that
it's
is
neat
cool.
to see.
Totally. All right, let's move on. Next up, new electric scooter to come with that's a lot of X's. XL seat, but not likely headed to America.
This is if you're familiar with Aether Energy, they're probably like the biggest competitor for Ola when it comes to like homegrown electric scooter startup in India. And they've come or they are coming out next month with a new scooter called the Rizta. And we don't know too much about it yet, but one of the things that they have told us is that it's supposed to have the biggest seat ever on a electric scooter and also the biggest storage capacity. And as part of their marketing, they're calling it an XXXXXXL seat. And they've got this great billboard they put up with a massive seat showing it off. So I thought this was kind of funny. Unfortunately, we're not going to get these in the US, it seems, anytime soon. Even Ola said like 2 years ago that they were planning to come to the US and nothing's happened there. So there's a lot of interesting Indian electric scooter startups, but the market in India is just so huge that I don't think they even care about North America. Like the difference in market size, we're like a drop in the bucket with our two-wheeler market. So fortunately, I don't think we're going to get these, but I can imagine there are a lot of people that when they hear that there's an XXXXXXL seat, they kind of like their ears perk up, like, oh, that sounds pretty comfy. So maybe there is a market here in the US.
Yeah, I feel like there's a US is too fat joke to make, but I'm not gonna do that. All right, let's move on. Candy's new collapsible electric golf cart is the latest tiny EV coming for your neighborhood.
I am kind of in love with this thing. I have like this weird attraction to weird electric vehicles, and this is like tickling all the right parts of that EV fetish that I have. This is a mini golf cart, basically. Like it has all of the things that you need to be a golf cart, which is basically like 20 mile an hour speed, four grass tires, and forward and backward seats, but it is collapsible. So the whole thing like shrinks into itself. Basically, the front wheels and rear wheels come closer together. The wheelbase shrinks and then it becomes super short. I think it's like less than 5 feet when you shrink it down. So you can like store it in your garage without taking up very much space. And then you pull it out and it just like extends itself into a full-size mini electric golf cart. The funny thing is that it's only a two-seater despite having a front and rear bench. I think based on the pictures and seeing the models on it, that you could probably fit like four narrow people on it because, you know, the two models seem to have a little bit of space next to them, or perhaps, you know, like an adult and a child in the front seat, and then, you know, a few kids in the rear. But technically, they call it a two-seater. It's pretty low power. It's actually listed at either 1 kilowatt or 5 kilowatt on different spec sheets I found for it, so I think the company didn't
Jeez,
quite decide.
that's
Yeah,
a big difference.
I'm guessing it's closer to the one based on the size of the motor in the back there. I mean, my mini truck has a similar, you know, rear axle motor just like that, and it's I think 3 kilowatt, and the motor is a lot chunkier than the motor on here. So I'm thinking that's going to be more like a 1 kilowatt. But the good news is that all of these Asian companies, they always rate with continuous power instead of peak power. So, you know, if you're talking 1,000 watts continuous, then yeah, it's probably putting out 2 or 3,000 watts peak, which for a small two-seater golf cart that, you know, rides on basically like sidewalks and multi-use trails is probably enough, I'm imagining. Like, you know, it's not a hot rod. But the best part of all, I think, is the price. Golf carts, if you're not familiar, are like crazy expensive. It could be like $10,000, $12,000 in the US. But this thing is priced at $5,000. So, you know, half the seating capacity, but also half the price and probably takes up half the space in your garage. So for all the people out there that are like, yeah, like maybe a golf cart would be useful for getting around the neighborhood, but I don't want to shell out $12,000. Well, $49.99 might just be enough to, win some people over. I would absolutely drive the hell out of this thing if I had one of these. Like, I just think it's so awesome to have, utility cart functionality in something that fits in like a bicycle parking spot. Like, it's basically a non-sporty go-kart at that point. I don't know. I feel like you're less jazzed about this than I am, Seth.
Well, I'm like my initial thought is like I have a Ryobi lawnmower that costs around $5,000. It's got a motor that obviously, powers the actually the motor does not power the blades. They're two separate extra motors. But when I go in the wintertime, I put a plow on it and I take the motors off, and it's actually quite powerful and pretty fast, like, surprisingly fast. I think it probably hits 10 miles per hour with, with a big snowplow on it. So for me, I'm like, oh, that's like I would much rather have that thing than Ryobi's a Japanese brand, but they're all over the place. They have tons of smaller electric stuff. They make, drills and power tools. And, that thing's pretty sweet already. So what does this get you that that doesn't have? Obviously, there's two seats here, three or four, depending, how you look at it. It's got some, options to put a cover on top of it, which is cool. But I kind of feel like the Ryobi would be more fun, like it would be, you would be able to do all this stuff with, a little creativity on Ryobi's part. And then you have the utility aspect where you have the torque that you can push a snowplow around, or you can throw some blades on there and mow your yard with it. So for me, like I like the idea. I definitely, mini golf carts make a ton of sense, but I have to wonder if the price is like dare I say a little high for something like this. Maybe 2 or 3,000 bucks would make a lot of sense. But then, we're talking about like shipping him in the box and getting him over here and all the other stuff that probably costs $2,000 or $3,000 by itself. And got to have some margin as well. So, yeah, I'm like you said, I'm not quite as on board as you are because I have something very similar to this, already. But at the same time, like if this opens the market to more stuff, then I'm cool with it.
Man, you rained all over my mini electric golf cart parade there. Now I'm like, well, maybe I should just get a lawnmower if it's the same price, but I can mow the lawn. But then you've got like, you look like in what was that movie? Can't Buy Me Love, where he like rides off with the girl on his lawnmower at the end.
That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I feel like my wife would be more likely to get on the golf cart than on a mower with me. But it is hard to discount the fact that only one of them can mow your lawn.
Yeah, and I leave so when I turn it, in the wintertime it turns into a not that we have big winter dark anymore, but when I put the plow on, I take off the thing and it's got quite a lot of room underneath where the blades are. So it actually goes off road pretty well. It doesn't have all wheel drive. I but it actually gets around pretty well. Like go up steep hills, I can push a plow. So it kind of feels like Ryobi might have something here. If they say, hey, we have this platform, we're already selling tons of them. Why not, put a bigger seat on it and put a thing over top of it, and all of a sudden you can have like a multi tool, which Ryobi knows pretty well.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Huh. Ryobi little electric golf cart. I
Yeah,
like it.
and there's a lot of other electric ride-on mowers, and they're all in the 5,000-ish range. I'm sure they're all made in the same factory in China somewhere. All right, let's get to our questions. Carl in San Diego's verbose as always. If Anybody out there has a question? I see a lot of people online right now, 581 people. I think most of those people are on Twitter. If you have a question that you want us to answer, make sure you put it in the comments right now. We'll get to them in the next few minutes here, but we'd love to hear from you. So Carl says, have you reached out to Assembly Member Tasha Borner in California to interview her about the proposed e-bike licensing bill? That sounds like a fun thing to do.
We haven't talked to the assembly member Borner, but yeah, it would absolutely be interesting. I think that's still in a committee, if I'm not mistaken. Both of those two big e-bike bills that we were looking at, I believe, are still in committee. But yeah, that would be interesting to get her take on it.
All right, and then following up, have either of us ridden a Tadpole recumbent trike yet? It's kind of Mario Kart in real life. Micah, reach out to Cat Trike, who manufacture and are based in Florida. What are your take on that? I know we rode trikes at one of the Euro bikes.
Yeah, I don't think I've done a Tadpole recumbent though. I was
Oh
looking
yeah, recumbent.
into one of them several years ago because I wanted to just put like a ridiculous amount of power into it and turn it into like a go-kart basically. But I was looking at like non-electric ones that I could convert. Now there are some really good electric options out there. Very pricey because each one of those modifiers in the name, recumbent, trike, electric, everything adds more dollar signs to it. But that would definitely be awesome to test some of those now that there are some good options on the market. You don't have to convert them yourself.
All right, moving on. You know what? Actually, before we do that, the recumbent trike thing, I'm remembering our favorite Australian YouTuber Bruno did a recumbent trike, and I think it was like a 10 kilowatt or something insane, where he was actually like spinning out and doing,
I think it was like 30 kilowatts. I think it
yeah, it
was
was.
three 10 kilowatt motors.
Right, it was insane. We'll have to pull that up at some point. Maybe I'll do that in the background while we're answering questions here.
Yeah, that thing just could not get traction.
Right. Well, it was just turned it immediately into a spinning wheel. Let me see if I can find that while we talk about the next question. Frederick P. What about the new e-bike laws being enacted? We talked about this a little bit last time, but what's basically the rundown there? I'm assuming
Yeah, so I don't think either of them have made like forward progress yet. The California one is a little more up for debate regarding electric bike licenses. I know there's a lot of support for it in California. That's where you've got a lot of people concerned about younger riders, teenagers that are riding e-bikes. They don't know the rules of the road, or some of them just don't care about the rules of the road. So you get a lot of these sort of like e-bike youth gangs riding around sort of thing. And so this requirement to force non-driver's licensed e-bike riders to get an e-bike license has a lot of public support. We'll have to see, if this bill makes it out of committee and if it passes in the California Assembly. The same bill was brought up last year and did not make it through. So this year could be different now that there's a lot more momentum. In New Jersey, that's where the other potentially more divisive bill is being discussed. That one is proposing to require electric bikes to carry liability insurance, just like cars and motorcycles and that sort of thing, and also to require them to be registered, just like you would register a car. That one seems to have a lot more support within the legislature. I don't think that one's made progress yet either, but that one does look like it could be on track to actually pass and become law, which would be sort of, groundbreaking in the industry because nowhere are electric bikes treated as motor vehicles. It's sort of like widely accepted at both the federal level and basically every state level that these are classified as bicycles and not motor vehicles. So this would be a major change to the status quo in the industry. You
All
find
right,
that
sorry.
crazy trike video?
Yes, I did. So I'm going to put that on the screen here. So this kind of like I don't even know if he's making videos anymore. I think last week, like 11 months ago. But he made this crazy trike. I mean, he makes crazy everything, but oh, good Cybertruck. But he made a trike that had a Australian guy. So he made a 42 kilowatt e-bike, 56 horsepower, triple motor, madness. And I don't know if he shows driving it, but you can see motors and setup there. And
I definitely remember some driving clips somewhere.
I know, and I did a quick look for the earlier one. Oh, I guess he wants to
Yeah,
go to Facebook for
5 years
that.
ago.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like,
It's
I'm just
funny
making.
we both under like we both misremembered on the low end how powerful this insane electric recumbent trike was.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know what happened to that guy. He probably got a job at like Bafang or something, but or you know, Surron. But yeah, he's not making
He's actually
videos
working
anymore.
for a BMS company.
Oh, that makes perfect sense, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you know, he was making insane bikes that had like, you know, people make bikes with like, oh, it's got 9 kilowatts of motor. That's insane. He would make like in the, you know, 30s and 40s and 50 kilowatts. I mean, that trike, I think the advertisement on it was, or something like 840 amps. Like that's car, like those wires, the thickness of those wires is like what you see in cars. Obviously he's not doing, you know, 400 volt system probably yet, but it's just crazy, like the stuff he's building here. So anyway, that's kind of one of our fun things. If you guys want to go down a rabbit hole, that's a fun area to go.
I
All right.
found the riding video, by the way.
Okay.
I just sent it to you
All right, let's see
on
if we can find it, because I think it's worth like watching this because it's just fun.
yeah, like if you just enjoy nutty combinations of wheeled vehicles and electronics, this is wild. I
Well,
think
and
it
trikes can be fun, you know. Let's see. I'm sure it's like right here. Okay. Maybe I'll turn
yeah,
this
gotta turn
down.
this thing on now and see how it goes, man. Yeah, jump to about a minute in. He's also he's got a full face helmet and flip flops on.
Yeah. And a wife beater.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he's gonna make full use of that wife beater in a second if I remember correctly on his video ends.
It's just hilarious because, like, the tire just turns the butter like
Yeah, I mean,
immediately.
like you just see the smoke coming off of it, which is not normal e-bike behavior.
Amp switch all the time, man. And then we put some. Oh, I left my mark here. I left some
I mean,
mark
look at the
here.
tires. They're.
Your comments like.
Oh, so he didn't include the crash in this video. I remember there's a video of him crashing wearing that white beater.
Oh man. I mean, I guess you're starting out pretty low, so. All right. Let's get back. Let's get back. Sorry. Let's get back to reality here. We
Little
could
sidetrack there.
watch this stuff all day. All right, back to Carl. I think there are a few industry standards we should be asking for. One single smart charging plug standard, so a universal charger can no negotiate with BMS to supply 36 volt, 48 volt, 72 volt, and eliminate battery fires. And then two speed controllers on e-bikes to help enable riders to shift to the correct speed for a class 1 trail instead of limiting speed of e-bikes by class. We should be giving users speed limiting ability. All right, so those are the two things. I agree in some like standardization would be good. You know, battery standardization would be really good. But I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, the problem I always run into there is that I don't see how to align the interests of these companies because they all sell replacement batteries, and especially when you get to a company like Rad, that they've got their own connector on the battery, so you can't just like you know, go to AliExpress and buy a battery that'll fit a Rad kind of thing. And so, you know, it makes up a big part of their revenue, selling all of these replacement parts, especially the batteries. And so I just don't know how we can incentivize these companies to standardize around a single design when that's a big part of their take home.
Yeah, we were kind of hoping that the regulations around building fire safe batteries would do that, but we've seen that Rad went in the direction of building what is that called, potted batteries, and then other companies are doing other things. So even that didn't kind of make anybody standardized much at all. Carl in San Diego says, good move by Rad. It costs money to build sustainable, high-quality stuff, and the race to the bottom gives everyone the impression that micro-mobility tools are disposable. Yes, that's something we should also talk about, like disposable e-bikes that, you know, like the $400 ones you see on Amazon. That's not good for anybody. It's not good for the environment. So that's something we kind of glossed over, but something we should bring up. All right, let's get into Strommer. So Carl brings up Strommer bikes. These e-bike companies should all have bought one and reverse engineered it. I don't want to fire a pardon issue, but car replacement demands a great first ride, I guess. So Strommer's bike company that is kind of weird because they are extremely premium. Prices are, you know, up to 10,000 beyond, but they're also rear hub motors instead of mid drives. And like, this is my personal experience. I know a lot of people have different experiences. It was fine, but it wasn't anything insanely good to me. Like I thought it was a good bike, especially for a rear hub motor. But when I rode Strommers, I was kind of like, yeah, this is a good bike, but it's not a great bike. And it's certainly not a triple the price of a typical, you know, rear hub bike thing. So what's your take on Strommer?
Yeah, so I mean, I think where they differentiate themselves is that they use like just the highest end components, and that's where a lot of the cost on those, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 e-bikes comes from. Is that they're just, you know, going through these parts catalogs and saying like, give me the best of everything, and then they put them on these bikes. But a lot of these parts, part of what makes them expensive is that they're super lightweight, but then you put it on a heavy, you know, big old e-bike with a big rear hub motor. And you kind of negate some of those weight gains. Then, I mean, you know, a lot of these bike parts, yes, you get these like small incremental gains when you pay another like, you know, $2,000 for electric shifting kind of thing. But for the majority of riders, it's just not something that they've even ever considered, like that, you know, I want my bike to shift for me and I don't want this cable here. I want it to just like think and send the signal to the transmission. So like, yeah, it is all like super nice components. You know, a Swiss bike is going to be a Swiss bike, right? But you know, it's just so much over the top for what the average consumer needs.
Yeah,
it's capitalism, right? If you got a bunch of money and you want the best, you can right. go get the best components.
Yeah, and they're, you know, I'm sure their replacement and warranties are all, you know, top notch. So but you know, that starting price is unthinkable for a lot of people. All right. Theotis James says the e-golf cart that we talked about was great until that price drop. Yeah, I mean, I have to say that price, like, I love the idea. I love the thinking there. I just wonder if I'm actually surprised in your weird Alibaba searchings, you didn't see something, you know, half that price or something.
Yeah, it's, I've seen a couple like weird expanding golf carts, but nothing quite like that. It's a market that I feel like is underserved. The mini collapsible golf cart.
Yeah, and the more the merrier. Let's try some stuff. Let's make some stuff happen. I'm not mad at it. I'm just, that's where my Ryobi. back to the Tadbolt trike. He's got a Befang HD on it that hits 35 miles per hour. I kind of think the Tadpole trike may be a cool way to make a 35 mile per hour vehicle. I think that's a, you know, pretty safe, like if you're not Bruno and pretty easy to make a fast bike, low horsepower required to get up to that speed, the aerodynamic advantage, low. Some, you know, if you're gonna be on three wheels, the Tadpole trike is a good form factor to be on. I guess Bolton Bikes guy is making a 55 mile per hour one. I would not want to go 55 on a trike. Chains are longer, obviously. I wonder if there's an opportunity to do a pedal by wire on those, just like a little generator in the front.
Wire, yeah, the shift and drive. Yeah.
And then nobody would ever pedal, but who cares? All right, then you need a pedal foot retention on these trikes. If your foot falls off, your whole leg gets sucked under, and you break bones. Okay, now I'm no longer a trike fan. After that.
Yeah, that's a good note to end on. I mean, important to note, but yeah.
All right, I think that's it.
I think that's all of the comments for this week. Thank you guys, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back in another 2 weeks on our normal Friday time slot. So we'll see you next time, everybody.